And welcome to The Harvest with me, Carmel Fisher. On today's show, we are covering very exciting news from Mr. James Eagle, all about data visualization. And he speaks to us about the technology advancements coming, etc. But now, James, welcome.
Thank you, Carmel. Actually, it's very interesting because I come from a financial background. The last 20 years, I've worked in this industry called asset management, which unless you're in it, doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but basically it's an industry that manages trillions of dollars in assets for institutions and individuals. And I kind of started out in this very kind of corporate world where I was working for all these big institutions. I won't bore you with the names of where I worked, but my background was I was originally in the investment industry. I was on the investment side. I worked in an area called fixed income. I also worked with equities. And then somehow or another, I became what's known as an investment writer. So I was writing about markets, writing about the economy. I worked for a group called Fidelity, a very large asset manager. And when I was there, my job was to write thought leadership pieces. And I did this for quite a few companies and somehow I ended up in Switzerland. And I'll tell you how Eagly came about, which is the company that I now have. So basically, I was in a company about 6 years ago, I think 7 years ago, and I had this problem. Basically, I didn't know if anyone was reading what I was writing. And my job was to be an investment writer. And that worried me. I mean, I was getting good feedback from people, from senior management, from portfolio managers and analysts, but I didn't hear from people who really mattered, from the people who really mattered, and those were the investors. So I had no idea if anyone was reading what I was writing, and I was earning this fantastic Swiss salary. And that worried me a little bit. So I decided to try and write something on LinkedIn because that was the only social media kind of network that I knew that kind of made sense to me. I wasn't very digitally literate back then. And that's what I did. And basically, it was a disaster. Turns out I wasn't a very good writer. I mean, I could write, but I wasn't very good. My writing was boring. People found it boring and they didn't want to read it. And that depressed me quite a lot. Actually, it worried me a lot because it showed me that I was basically adding no value for this company that I was working for. And my job was to write about markets and try to enlighten people. And I wasn't doing that. I wasn't really adding any value. So I went on this long journey of discovery. So I discovered this thing called marketing. I also discovered these people who were apparently thought leaders in marketing, such as Simon Sinek and all these. I went to seminars, I read books, and I basically transformed myself and transformed my mindset, and I became a very different person. And that was me 6 or 7 years ago, and this is me today. What I'm known for now is producing data visualizations. And for a long time, like what I try to do is I kind of went back to how can I make people listen to me? That was the basis of what I wanted. I wanted people to have an emotional connection, and I wanted to understand what makes people excited and what will make people listen. So I tried lots of things. I started writing, I kept on writing, and I got better at it. I'm still writing. And I tried video, that didn't really work so well. It's work in progress. But I discovered something that really worked, and that was the use of data. Because the problem that we have nowadays is that it's basically raining data. In fact, the world is flooding with data in this digital world. And in theory, data should make things easier to understand. The more you get, the more data you have, the more enlightened you should be. But in reality, that's not true. In reality, what we're seeing is that the world is getting more confusing. It's getting actually more harder to understand. And actually the visibility that we have of the world around us is really poor. And that's why we have problems with misinformation. We have we're exposed to risks that we have no idea we're exposed to. And part of the problem, it's just us as human beings. We started off as people who hunted and gathered and learned how to survive in the wild. And our brains haven't really developed fast enough or evolved fast enough to understand this data-rich world that we've created. And part of the problem is that we are unable to cognitively think naturally in this data-rich world. We don't think like computers, we're human beings.
Yeah, and just to, you know, to give clarity, I love everything you're saying. In the world of, you know, overload, basically information overload, and just more coming at us faster. And, you know, news is very important. We do need to have a fresh take on things daily, even hourly. But how does one absorb just the important bits? And especially in your field, this was the problem you were trying to solve, is that, you know, you just weren't being noticed. And so with all of this information load, how do you, okay, you use your data visualization charts, they're fantastic, but what sprang that on? And are you seeing a change? And is there a percentage of change that you've seen from the typical content writing in terms of articles and many words to then visualizing the data in the way that you do? What was the significant change you've seen that obviously helps to engage your audience more?
It's a good question. I mean, first of all, I was targeting a particular audience. So when I started out, I needed to get the attention of the right people in order for me to survive as a business. So I was targeting the CEOs of big banks, the CIOs of big banks, chief investment officers, big portfolio managers that manage billions of dollars. And one of the things, you know, one of the problems that you have when you speak to large institutions, when you say, who are your target clients? They'll say, institutional investors. Well, what are institutional investors? And these people are basically humans. They're ordinary people. They go, they have families, they have kids, they go shopping, they vote, they watch Netflix. They're just ordinary individuals. So what you have to tap into is what matters to them, what matters to them in their life. So if I'm trying to influence or get the attention of a, let's say, a portfolio manager managing a multi-billion dollar portfolio, I'm not going to impress him with a white paper because he doesn't know who I am and he doesn't respect my intellect. And he's probably not going to read any articles I write. But what he might do is, on his way home from work on a train, he might look at his smartphone and see a data visualization that's exciting. And because he's a kind of an academic, he's kind of attracted to the data side of things and the story behind it. And it's fun to watch. There's music, there's color. It tells a story. It's a story that resonates with him personally or her. And that is where, you know, that's what I try to do. That's why the data visualizations work, because it's not the technology, it's not the coding, it's not the fact that it's just a moving image or a chart that's moving. It's the story that's behind that chart, which taps into human emotions and reaches to a very personal level, the people that I'm trying to target. And so that's what I did. And that's basically how I look at data and the solution to data overload. Cognitively, we cannot handle the amount of data that's out there. We can't. And the problem is that we tend to look at data like it's a very scientific thing, like that data tells one truth. It doesn't. It tells multiple truths. And data is also bias. Data, for, you know, a classic example. The way that we measured inflation in the 1970s is not the same as the way that we measure inflation today, because the basket of goods that makes up our measurement of inflation has changed. And therefore, comparing inflation from the 1970s compared to today is kind of a bit silly, because we're measuring a measure of inflation that's totally changed in an economy that's totally changed. My argument is, and what I try to say, is that you need to always remember that we are human, and that what we're looking for is clarity, and we're trying to see the world in a human way. And that human way often involves emotions and feelings, and perception. It's what makes humanity beautiful. It's what makes us human. Rather than looking through the world like it is like a robot or a computer, we don't look at the world that way. And so if you're trying to reach someone and trying to make someone listen to you, you can't just give them information. And that was the big problem that I had in my career. I was providing information and not thinking about how people feel about it. And so I was writing about the articles like, what does it mean if the Fed cuts interest rates? And nobody reacted to it because nobody could understand how that affects their everyday lives. And I think that's the difference between making a data visualization or making a piece of content and making it actually matter to someone. So you see a lot of mistakes being made by companies. Often they do things like, for example, they'll write, "We had a conference event. Does anyone care that you had a conference event? We have a product. Does anyone care that you have a product? Here's a data visualization of a chart. Does anyone care about that chart?" You know, it doesn't, if you can't make it match the person, and if you can't make someone care about what you're trying to say, then no one will listen to you. So that's what I have been trying to develop for the last 6 or 7 years. And that's how, that's what happened to me. That was my story. So I tried and tested lots of things. It wasn't a linear curve. I failed and made lots of mistakes along the way. And then in the middle of the pandemic, around about 2021, end of 2021, the world was flooded with pandemic data and everyone was just looking at data. Someone asked me, "Can you create an animated chart like this?" And I said, "No, I don't know how." So I went and tried to figure out how it was done. And luckily I had the right skill set to do it because I know how to code. I learned how to code when I was a teenager. I'm pretty artistic, so I like color. And by then I had really gotten into the storytelling thing. So I was really into,
sweet marriage of all the right parts of James coming together. That's fantastic. And I like what you're saying about numbers can be so cold just inherently. And then it's typical to almost forget that there's a human at the receiving end of all those financial data. And for you to, have the ability to also then be creative and visualize this in such a creative way, because really, you give us exactly what we need to see, and you tell the story, to your point, in a way that data has never really been told before. Without the long hours spent reading, without trying to find all the right keywords, you just tell a story that's really succinct and visually stimulating. So let's talk about technologies. Like, what new advancements do you think have come or will come that may impact the way you do your job, and also perhaps investors and how they position themselves to leverage these new technologies? Of course, there's AI. Do you use any of that? Speak to us more about the technological advancements and the impact for yourself and investors.
So I think AI has been fantastic. I mean, I remember exactly when the exact moment I discovered the existence of ChatGPT, and that was, I was at a conference, MIT conference in Boston, and it was an AI conference, and I think ChatGPT had been launched 3 weeks before the event took place. So I remember going there, and it was early morning. I was really jet lag, and this young guy who had far too much energy for my liking came over with a cup of black coffee, and he had just flown in from San Diego. And he said to me, "Have you heard about this thing, ChatGPT?" I said, "No." He said, "Have you been living under a rock?" And I was like, "What? What do you mean? What?" And he said, "Well, I think 3 weeks in the tech community is a long time." So I was a bit slow on the uptake. It was absolutely mind-boggling, because I think the first thing I tried to do was get it to code. I was blown away with the results. It wasn't perfect at all. I mean, even now, you can't rely on it as an all-encompassing tool to do what you wanted to do. But it certainly, and it can be a bit messy when it codes. So it can create a lot of junk code as well, like badly written code. So you do have to clean it up, but that's fine. You can edit things and make it better. But it certainly, that was the first thing I tried, and I was really impressed. You know, with it somehow made me solve problems, even if it didn't do it directly. If I had a problem with a piece of code that I couldn't do, it may not provide, it didn't always provide me with the answer, but it provided me with a seed of thought that would help me get to the solution, which I thought was amazing. It's just so much easier. It's almost like having a colleague there to bounce ideas off, I would say. Onto your question about what do I see in the future, I think coding will probably disappear in the future. I also think that in my world, what it will do is that it will democratize access to so much technology. And when I mean democratize, I mean like as in it will allow people to do what I do, make data visualizations without the need of me. I mean, I'm not bothered by that threat. So for me, I really want data visualization to take off and really be embedded in every part of our daily lives, because it will help us as a species, as the human species, the human race, understand the world that we live in better. There's a greater cause there. And we need to be able to understand this torrent of data that's being created every day, this exponential increase in data. And if AI can help us combat that and actually allow us to see the world better, then I think it's fantastic. I just see it as an economic evolution. So the economy, as we know, because I come from an economics background and a financial background, the economy is always evolving. The economy, I mentioned inflation earlier on. You know, if we look at the economy today and we compare it to the 1970s, it's very different. Back in the 1970s, it was very carbon intensive. We used a lot of oil to run our economy. We still use a lot of oil to run our economy, but things have changed a little bit. You know, it's a lot more digital. It's a lot more efficient. So the economy is always changing, and often it's the changes that occur are for the better.
Absolutely. You know, evolution is a positive process, and it's just bettering itself with time. And I think as long as we can keep abreast, because with any transitions, there's always the outliers. And I think our job is to, yes, make information easier to absorb, the right information. And so, you know, to that effect, some regulations got to be in place, because again, there's always the outliers. And I think if we work collaboratively as individuals, as companies, as organizations, countries, I believe that, you know, that helps move the entire evolving process in the right direction, covering all bases as far as possible. What are some surprising trends that you've unwittingly discovered or uncovered while you've been preparing any of your data visualizations? Was there anything that was like, wow, I had no idea I would discover this trend while I was trying to do an analysis on something else?
I think in data visualization, and of course, I knew none of this before I started out, but there's kind of three parts to it. So the first part is acquisition, acquiring data, which isn't as hard as people think. It's quite easy to get lots of data. But the second part of it is data exploration. And the third part, of course, is creating the data visualization itself. It's visualizing the data. But data exploration is one of the most important parts of data visualization. That's when you get a data set and you explore it and you try and see something that you may not have known existed. And basically, that's my day. I spend the vast majority of time exploring data. You hear a lot of people saying that the biggest and hardest thing to do is to get data and clean it. Well, yes, but you have Python code to do that for you these days. Like, it shouldn't be the for me, it's not actually the hardest thing to do. You can extract data from nearly anything these days. And as the technology gets better, it's even easier. But the thing that's really hard to do is explore data and find patterns or see things that you wouldn't have otherwise seen. And it's incredibly exciting when you see something that no one else has seen. Last week, I did a chart, a really simple data visualization, just pitching the Pepsi versus Coca-Cola, a performance chart. It just shows how much Pepsi has outperformed Coca-Cola as a company, like it's massively outperformed. And for me, that's surprising because my own cognitive biases were going against me because I don't drink Pepsi, because you can't really buy Pepsi in Switzerland. That's the problem.
And I think, you know, that is what I'm trying to uncover, because that is what's so fantastic about data, is that perceptions could lead one and has led societies, you know, on different tracks altogether. And then when you look at the actual data, to your point, Pepsi has been outperforming, and yet in my mind, your mind, everyone that I know's mind, Coca-Cola is, you know, the leader, so to speak. So that is fantastic.
Sometimes you get surprised by how extreme something can be. And sometimes you can be surprised by how that preconception that you had about a story that everyone believed actually doesn't exist. So it's constantly reevaluating and seeing something that you may, you know, you're testing a theory or a hypothesis about the world that is based upon your human perception, and sometimes your perception is challenged. And I think more importantly, though, is that you have to always remember that your perception of the world is also personal to you, and that data actually can be looked at several different angles. So what you may see may look like the truth, but then you can find another truth out there that another data set shows that contradicts what you're seeing. So that's the really crazy part of it.
If anything, technology is bringing a lot of positives, including bringing everybody closer to the truth. Would you give some advice or recommendations to anyone trying to become a financial content creator? Anything that you've learned from your past journey that could help somebody who's aspiring to be in your shoes one day?
I think the path is not linear at all. And the skill sets that you have today may not be relevant in a few years' time. So the pace of change, it has accelerated over the last few decades. And I think that's what makes it really difficult, because your world is always changing. And with technological advances, it's changing even quicker than ever. And I think really what you, like for me personally, I would not get bogged down with the technicals. So it's very easy to think I need a certain skill set, I need a certain level of knowledge, and I need certain technology to help me succeed. In reality, your knowledge is always being refreshed constantly, and the technology you have is constantly changing. And so if you're aspiring to become a content creator, what you should do is really go back to the very, very basics of what it is to create great content. And that doesn't, and that's not, that's universal, that will never change. What I do whenever I create a piece of content, and this is regardless of whether it or not it is a video, a thought leadership paper, or a data visualization, I get a big piece of paper and I write on the top of that piece of paper, why should they care? I write, why should they care? And then I think about it. I think, well, you know, let's talk about healthcare. Healthcare in the US. Healthcare is expensive in the US. But why should I care? I'm rich. I can afford my healthcare. So if you have to take that around. Okay, fine. So healthcare is, or I don't care because I don't have healthcare insurance. That's another one. So suddenly your story doesn't resonate with your target audience. So then you have to take another step and think, well, how do I make them care? If we don't fix the US healthcare system, healthcare is always going to be expensive. And you are either not going to be able to afford healthcare, or you're going to be paying too much for healthcare. And if that continues, life expectancy will continue to decrease in the United States. Bang, fear. So then you've got emotions going. You've got the wealthy in society worried that they're paying too much money, which they hate doing. You've got poor people thinking, well, this is absolutely insane. Why shouldn't we have access to healthcare? And instantly you've got both people listening to you. Secondly, You're creating this kind of emotional connection. So you're saying, well, we have to do something. We have to fix this problem. We can't let life expectancy fall, because that's also a negative. No one wants to die earlier. So you stitch that all together, and then suddenly you've got a story. And then once you have that, it actually doesn't matter how you deliver it, whether it is a data visualization, whether it is an article, whether it is whatever. You've got them listening to you. People are listening to you at that moment in time. And I think that's the most important skill set that you need to have when you start out as a content creator. How do you make people listen? First thing, make them care.
Wonderful nugget of insight and information there, James. Thank you so much. That's it for The Harvest with me, Carmel Fisher, where you get your capital market news, views, and clues. James, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's it for The Harvest, available anywhere you listen to podcasts.